This is a brief summary of Scott Horton's two-hour history on Russia, Ukraine, and NATO. He starts by explaining the importance of people in high places discussing things like NATO expansion. He cites George Kennan in the New York Times in 1997. George Kennan is the architect of America's containment policy from 1945 up until 1991. And George Kennan said, "Expanding NATO would be the most fateful error of American policy in the entire post-Cold War era. Such a decision may be expected to inflame the nationalistic, anti-Western, and militaristic tendencies in Russian opinion, to have an adverse effect on the development of Russian democracy, to restore the atmosphere of the Cold War to East-West relations, and to impel Russian foreign policy in directions decidedly not to our liking." He also quotes people like Strobe, Talbot, Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, Robert Gates, Pat Buchanan, dedicated a chapter in his book, A Republic, Not an Empire, to provoking a potential war with Russia. Even political scientists like John Mearsheimer had constantly been warning about the negative aspects of NATO expansion going back decades. Starting with the Bush senior years, there was a meeting between Secretary of State James Baker and Mikhail Gorbachev. In the meeting, there was an agreement, this is well documented by historians like Susan Eisenhower, there was an agreement that if the Warsaw Pact, headed by the Soviets, were to disband their military alliance, then the NATO, North American Treaty Organization, that military alliance, would not expand towards Russia. Later in the Clinton years, you have the first round of NATO expansion, America already going back on its word. They join countries like Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic. Around this time, there were high tensions between America and Russia. The BBC reports in November of 2010, singer James Blunt, quote, prevented World War III. Singer James Blunt has told the BBC how he refused an order to attack Russian troops when he was a British soldier. Blunt was head of a column of 30,000 NATO troops in Kosovo. The direct command that came from General Wesley Clark was to overpower them, the Russians in a certain area. Various words were used that seemed unusual to us. Words such as destroy came down the radio. The general above him is a guy named Sir Michael Jackson. The point is that this is a real story that almost provoked a war with a nuclear power. So we have had a number of close calls. Under the Bush Jr. presidency, NATO expanded again into Bulgaria, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia. In other words, all of those countries now have war guarantees from America. So even countries like Latvia or Lithuania, which have a lot of ethnic Russians and might prefer a Russian regime to whatever they currently have, if Russia starts calling the shots in those countries, well, their independence has been violated, and now the U.S. is at war with Russia. So an attack on Latvia is now treated equally as an attack on Louisiana. Scott Horton then quotes a 2007 Putin address to the Munich Security Conference, telling them, "I think it is obvious that NATO expansion does not have any relation with the modernization of the alliance itself or with ensuring security in Europe. On the contrary, it represents a serious provocation that reduces the level of mutual trust, and we have the right to ask against whom is this expansion intended, and what happened to the assurances our Western partners made after the dissolution of the Warsaw Pact. Where are those declarations today? No one even remembers them. But I will allow myself to remind this audience what was said. I would like to quote the speech of NATO General Secretary Mr. Warner in Brussels on May 17, 1990. He said at this time that, quote, the fact that we are ready not to place a NATO army outside of German territory gives the Soviet Union a firm security guarantee. Where are those guarantees? Scott then cites a memo written by William J. Burns, the American ambassador, who is currently the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. This is back in 2008. He said, During his annual review of Russia's foreign policy, Foreign Minister Lavrov stressed that Russia had to view continued eastward expansion of NATO, particularly to Ukraine and Georgia, as a potential military threat. Not only does Russia perceive encirclement and efforts to undermine Russia's influence in the region, but it also fears unpredictable and uncontrolled consequences which would seriously affect Russian security interests. Experts tell us that Russia is particularly worried that the strong divisions in Ukraine over NATO membership, with much of the ethnic Russian community against membership, could lead to a major split involving violence or, at worst, civil war. In that eventuality, Russia would have to decide whether to intervene, a decision Russia does not want to have to face. So that was in 2008, and that's exactly what happened after May 2014 in the Donbas region. Final important event in the George W. Bush administration was the Georgian conflict of 2008, summarized here by Ted Galen Carpenter. George W. Bush's administration foolishly encouraged Georgia's president, Mikhail Saakashvili, to believe that his country was an important U.S. ally and that the United States and NATO would come to Georgia's rescue if it became embroiled in a conflict with Russia. Washington provided millions of dollars in weaponry to Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, and even trained Georgian troops. Bush also had pushed U.S.-NATO allies to give Georgia and Ukraine membership in the alliance, albeit unsuccessfully. In August of 2008, Saakashvili launched a military offensive to regain control of South Ossetia, one of two secessionist regions. The Georgian offensive inflicted casualties on Russian peacekeeping troops that were deployed there since the early 1990s, and Moscow responded with a full-scale counter-offensive that soon led to the occupation of several Georgian cities and brought Russian troops to the outskirts of the capital. Despite Washington's previous supportive rhetoric, the president discovered that the United States was not willing to fight a war on Georgia's behalf, and he had to sign a peace accord on Russian terms. The parallels between that fiasco and current Western, especially U.S. policy regarding Ukraine, are alarming. Moving on to the Obama years, NATO continues to expand into Albania and Croatia. In 2014, Crimea votes to join the Russian Federation. Lots of independent polling matched up with those election results. And then in 2014, you have a coup against the democratically elected Viktor Yanukovych, which, if you're watching on YouTube or Odyssey or Minds, you can see the 2010 election results map in Ukraine. We have very heavy support for Yanukovych in the east, the Donbas region, and his opposition heavily supported by the West in the western region of the country. So this Donbas region got Yanukovych elected. And then there's a coup that kicks Yanukovych out of office. Here we have evidence that the U.S. was heavily involved in this overthrow of the democratically elected Viktor Yanukovych.
The United States aids Ukraine and her people so that we can fight Russia over there and we don't have to fight Russia here.
Prevent Ukraine! People of Ukraine, this is your moment.
Народи України!
Your fight is our fight.
Ваша боротьба – це наша боротьба.
2017 will be the year of offense.
Рік, 2017 рік буде ріком нападу.
All of us will go back to Washington and we will push the case against Russia.
Good. So I don't think Cleat should go into the government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you think what in terms of him not going into the government, just let him sort of stay out and do his political homework and stuff.
To Ukraine for my third visit in 5 weeks last Tuesday in support of these very goals, this time conducting parallel coordinated high-level diplomacy with EU High Representative Cathy Ashton, Since Ukraine's independence in 1991, the United States has supported Ukrainians as they build democratic skills and institutions, as they promote civic participation and good governance, all of which are preconditions for Ukraine to achieve its European aspirations. We've invested over $5 billion to assist Ukraine in these and other goals that will ensure a secure and prosperous and democratic Ukraine.
The challenge here is to try to attract it to the West, to get it to flip sides.
After the U.S. and NATO and the EU helped overthrow Yanukovych, there was a 2015 memorandum in the Donbas region where they voted to join the Russian Federation, and Putin actually rejected it. That took place in 2015, which again, if we look at the concentration of votes in that region, it's very likely that that was an accurate election result. As far as the end of the Obama administration goes, him and Hillary Clinton fake the Russiagate scandal and basically say that Vladimir Putin has committed an act of war against America by more or less installing Donald Trump into office, continuing to vilify Russia unnecessarily. Moving on into the Trump years, we have NATO expansion into Montenegro and North Macedonia. Horton says in the Trump section of his speech, worst of all, Trump withdrew the U.S. from the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty and withdrew from the Open Skies Treaty and had promised to let New START expire in 2021 had he been reelected. Open Skies, Dwight Eisenhower's idea, was finally signed by President Bush Sr. in 1992. It allowed for aircraft overflights of the U.S. and Russia by each other's air forces for surveillance so that each side could reassure themselves the other was not mobilizing for war. It's now dead. Putin offered to revive it. Biden declined. Here we have from ABC News. Trump admin approves new sale of anti-tank weapons to Ukraine. The Trump administration first approved the sale of javelins to Ukraine in 2017. That was October 1st, 2019. He then goes into the Biden years. Biden gets into office, announces $125 million in military aid package to Ukraine. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin bragged about it on his Twitter account when they delivered the first $60 million. Also, you have Reuters reporting that Ukraine-U.S. military exercises begin as Russia holds drills in Belarus. The final straws were summarized by James Corbett of the Corbett Report here. He says, an increase in NATO threats and provocations in recent months, including joint NATO-Ukrainian drills and an unprecedented $200 million airlift of weapons and ammunition to Kyiv in January. Second, the U.S.-NATO rejection of Russia's demand for a guarantee that NATO would not be offered membership to Ukraine. Finally, an increase in fighting in the Donbas region between Ukrainian troops that has been going on since March of 2014, or at least October of 2014, according to the New York Times, between Ukrainian troops and Russia-backed separatists, leading to the latter asking Russia for military support. This, as we know, culminated with the Russian State Duma adopting a resolution calling on Putin to recognize the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, DPR and LPR, which Putin did on February 21st. 3 days later, he announced a, quote, special military operation to protect the people of the Donbas. The special military operation very quickly expanded beyond the Donbas, striking targets in and near the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv and elsewhere around the country. Scott ends his speech with the Biden administration saying his national security advisor, Jake Sullivan's statements seem to indicate a possible plan to bait Russia into war, to bleed them dry in the Afghan style. Irony is not their strong point. He told CBS News, well, what the president has said is that we will continue to support Ukraine even after an invasion begins, and I'm not going to get into the specific details of what that will look like, but it is one of the three fundamental elements of our response. On January 14th, the New York Times ran a story called U.S. Considers Backing an Insurgency in Ukraine. In it, Helen Cooper wrote, "In Afghanistan, the United States showed itself to be dismal at fighting insurgencies, but when it comes to funding them, military experts say it's a different ballgame." She quoted the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO forces in Europe and Hillary Clinton advisor, retired Admiral James Stavridis. "If Putin invades Ukraine with a major military force, U.S. and NATO military assistance, intelligence, cyber, anti-armor, and anti-air weapons, offensive naval missiles will ratchet up significantly, and if turned into a Ukrainian insurgency, Putin should realize that after fighting insurgencies ourselves for two decades, we know how to arm, train, and energize them." Basically, the primary things that Putin is calling for to end the war is, one, no NATO membership for Ukraine and a neutral position. Two, Russian should be the second official language of Ukraine, with laws prohibiting it abolished. 3. Recognize Crimea as Russian territory. 4. Recognize the independence in the Donbas of Donetsk and Luhansk. 5. Demilitarization of Ukraine and abandonment of weapons that could be a threat to the Kremlin. 6. Banning of ultra-nationalist parties and organizations in Ukraine. Thank you for listening to the summary of Scott Horton's speech. Thank you for watching the Libertarian Institute and Don't Tread on Anyone podcast.